In this episode of The Full Nerd, we talk about crashing CPUs, upcoming CPUs, and frame rate targets. And welcome to episode 297, I got it right this time, of The Full Nerd, PC World's premiere podcast about PC building. I am your fill-in host, Adam Patrick Murray. On the line, I have Gordon Mong. Hello, Gordon. You're in some ghost-busting outfit?
Yeah, I have a Ghostbusters t-shirt. I got a gift for my niece and background.
Nice. Ghostbusters. Also on the line is Elena Yee.
I do not have a Ghostbusters anything.
Oh, you got a cool full nerd shirt.
The less cool. Well, that's true. I do have a full nerd shirt on.
Yeah, there you go. We're repping the podcast, not a podcast about movies, but here to talk about movies is Will Smith at the table with me. Hello, Will.
Hi, Adam. I'm wearing my favorite Star Trek t-shirt.
Oh, that is Star Trek. Yep.
Yeah.
It looks like something else. And on the verticals and horizontals is Willis Lai. Hello, Willis.
Hello, hello, everyone. Happy Tuesday. Who are you going to call on a Tuesday? The full nerd.
There you go. I like that. Man, every time I look at this number, we're 297. We're three away from 300. We should probably start planning what the hell we're going to do for 300.
See, when you say that, people are going to think that we're slow playing the actual plan, which is that we have not been planning anything, no. As far as I'm aware.
We actually do have some plans.
Okay.
Some plans. But for the actual podcast itself,
Hopefully something exciting happens that week.
I don't know.
It's in the works.
Yeah, something. Oh, yeah. Gideon, friend of the show, Gideon, is reminding me that I think one of the years we went to like a 0.5 because we pushed off.
Yeah, we did that at when we did a 100th episode musical spectacular, all in the wrong key at Maximum PC.
Oh.
And we had to do some point releases, as I recall, to
yeah,
have
that was
time
pretty bad.
For that to happen.
There is no auto-tuning, I think.
We hadn't invented auto-tuning yet. Yeah, no.
I don't think I've ever heard you sing, Gordon.
Gordon didn't.
Well, I didn't because, you know, it's basically, you can imagine how bad it would sound if you have people who can't sing and then you force them to sing. That's basically like, it's like as fun as drunk karaoke, except you're not drunk and it's not 2 o'clock in the morning. So
we
you're just stuck there. Wishing you could drive ice picks into your ear, I think is probably
for what it's worth.
Yeah, we really should have done that at Computex because you know karaoke's all over. In
I mean,
Taiwan,
it sounds like Gordon would have appreciated it, though.
I really would have wanted to see Gordon sing.
No, it sounds like he wouldn't have. He would.
I have done it. I have done it at a convention, and we were all on stage, and I did it. It was an Elvis song, so which is fine. Oh, but again,
Gordon singing
it's a convention. Everybody's drunk. Nobody cares.
Where's the video?
If you're doing an audio podcast and people expect singing from people who can sing, that's...
I mean, in fairness, the people who sang on that podcast could sing, but we had a production error that resulted in the wrong backing tracks being put on everything. Sang one key and we produced with another and nobody caught it until it was already out.
Oh, great.
Well, Belmont can sing.
And Nathan can sing too. Nathan has a pretty good singing voice.
Huh, interesting.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay. Yeah,
nice.
I guess he'll forever live with the he can't sing kind of reputation. I mean, so
look, it cemented his legend.
Well, you know who's having a hard time getting hardware to sing?
Oh, boy.
It's Intel.
Yeah.
This first topic, we kind of talked about this a couple weeks ago. We had a topic about reports of Intel CPUs, high-end desktop processors, crashing. You've actually experienced this yourself. We did a video on it, Will.
Yeah, Fortnite crashed pretty consistently on my 13900K if I was running at stock clocks. If you dialed it back down to 52X multiplier, no problem. Epic had a page, the Oodle people who do shader compression, texture compression stuff had a page about what to do. But it seems like the story is gaining momentum now.
Yeah. Gordon, you kind of brought this up when we were talking about potential topics to talk about on this week's show. You feel like it's now a good time to kind of revisit it, that things have changed a little bit. Why don't you fill us in, Gordon?
Yeah, so basically there was a report was out of ZDNet Korea that people were returning, you know, like not a lot, but they were returning, you know, 14900Ks, like, what, 10 a day or something, because they were having stability issues. And then the report was Intel said, we're looking into this. So then for some reason, it's reignited more interest in this because Hardware Unboxed has talked about it. Steve at Gamers Nexus talked about it this morning, in fact. He was calling out you talking to him about the problems that you had with Will's machine.
Were you talking about me? Uh-oh.
We talked about it with Steve when he was on the show. I can't remember if we talked about it on the show or if it was like after or before. But yeah, it came up.
Yeah, and there's actually been a few other podcasts that have talked about it because people like Paul's Hardware has talked about it. A lot of people are just like, what is going on? I think it's a very complicated topic. And I think the thing that sort of really broke everything was to have another very large company talked about it. And I will read this from NVIDIA directly to make sure I have it correctly. That basically, they did an update to a GeForce driver 552.12. And it says
in the bottom
patch
of the
notes,
yeah.
In the bottom of the patch notes, if your system is using an Intel 13th/14th gen unlocked desktop CPU and is experiencing stability issues/out of video memory error messages/crash to desktop while the game is compiling shaders, please consult the following sites for troubleshooting assistance. And it points to a post over on Intel community basically saying,
The thing we've kind of talked about before, right?
It was a post on Intel support forums. Intel is aware of reports regarding Intel Core 13th and 14th gen unlocked desktop processors experiencing issues with certain workloads. We're engaged with our partners are in conducting analysis of the reported issues. If you are experiencing these issues, please reach out to Intel customer support for further assistance in the interim. So basically, NVIDIA saying, my name is Paul. This is between y'all. Go talk to Intel if you're having video memory card problems. That sort of, I think, spurred a lot of people like, whoa, this is real. And we're sort of back to where we are. We did ask Intel to see if there's any updates because we have asked Intel for some time. What's going on? We'd like to be updated if you have any information regarding these issues. And we don't have any information to share yet at this point. Hopefully they do. But where we're at now is still a lot of guessing as to what is going on. Clearly there, as you have experienced directly, there are stability issues with some CPUs. And the way many people have fixed them, many is probably overstating it. The way some people have fixed them is to simply RMA the CPUs with Intel. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think there are some things to know that we do know. This seems to be only affecting 13th and 14th gen, correct? I have not seen reports of 12th.
I've not seen anybody with 12th gen problems,
No.
Correct, yeah. So there's that, I think. For the most part, we're talking about higher end CPUs. I don't think I've seen reports of i3s or i5s.
I've seen a few 7s, 14700s, but mostly 13900K and 14900K, not the KSs specifically, because it seems like whatever they do to qualify those S processors probably is.
Oh, really? So you've not seen any anecdotal KS reports?
So we put a KS in the machine that I was running just to test it and had no problems at all with that. But I also only ran it for a week, not, generally it took a few months for it to kind of build on a new processor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that definitely does narrow it down a bit because, I mean, the amount of people who buy that kind of hardware is, I feel like in the minority, I feel like more people buy in like the i5 kind of range.
Seems like it.
Assuming, right?
Yeah.
So, and this does seem to be affecting games. Now, you had some problems with other heavy workloads as well, but I think mainly the news right now is around games and around the OODLE, right?
OODLE is one of the problems. So when I did testing, I had a machine that would pass the extreme mem test, the Linux boot off a Linux thumb drive version, not the one that's built into your BIOS, not the one that runs in Windows. It would pass that. It would pass the OC... What is it? OCCT? Mm-hmm. Extreme memory test. It would pass all of that stuff. at normal clock speeds, and then it would crash with blank, no reported crash to the Windows crashing, you know, the Windows event log, and no log entry for a crash in the Fortnite logs when EAC presume generally what that means is that EAC is detecting writes to the memory that the game doesn't. EAC is an anti-cheat, easy anti-cheat. It detects cheating by looking at memory registers to see what has to look for unauthorized changes to specific memory registers. And if it detects those changes, it just crashes the game so that the person who's presumably cheating cannot impact other players in the multiplayer game, right? So it does a forced crash to kick them out of the game as quickly and safely as possible. And it tends to, like, it will detect memory corruption because of that. When I talked to one of my friends who makes games and has worked on anti-cheat stuff before, he was like, oh, look for this. You're getting, these are easy anti-cheat errors. You're having memory corruption. Look at your memory controller. Look at your, you know, your RAM's clocked too high. So I clocked the RAM down, still had the same problems. And on the affected machines, we're seeing those kinds of crashes. Oodle is another place where corruption in the shader compiling and shader decompressing will cause unexplained crashes, like the out of video memory crash is probably an Oodle related error, stuff like that.
Which and I think would point to the NVIDIA saying, hey, even though it's saying out of video memory, which you would think, oh, well, that's GPU an NVIDIA related. Problem. Yeah, right. They're saying, well, actually, no, it's not. So
it's going out of memory. It's running out of video memory because of some shader problem that's probably causing a race or something like that.
Yeah. And shader compilation is CPU intensive.
CPU memory and sometimes GPU, but usually CPU and memory is my understanding.
Okay. Yeah, there's a lot to unpack. I mean, I think there are a lot of things that we've tested. It's been hard. I mean, I've talked with Gordon about it. Like, you know, how do we continue to test this stuff? It's just, there's a lot of variables. It's hard to lock down. Is this a silicon lottery thing? Is this a, hey, motherboards are pushing too much voltages into things? I mean, it could be one thing. It could be all the things. It seems a little hard to kind of really put down at this moment, correct?
Well, so there's a component of that too, because one of the early recommendations for fixes on this sourced from Reddit that then I think filtered up into Oodle facts and Epic facts for Fortnite and other games were use an Intel Extreme overclocking tool to clock down your front side multiplier mm-hmm. a little bit, so bring it down from 55 or 56 to 52 or 53, and that generally will solve the problem. They said to turn off the multi-core, the motherboard overclocking. This is multi-core enhancements. I can't remember what the Gigabyte version is called, but like Gigabyte MSI, Asus all have versions of this thing that basically overclock the front side, overclock the motherboard CPU and dump a bunch of voltage into the CPUs in a lot of cases. And then the other thing they said was to set the SVID to Intel failsafes, which it turns out is a terrible thing to do. We've learned since releasing a video a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Because that basically puts you at the highest end voltages that the CPU will support.
It dumps a ton of voltage to get maximum stability, but by introducing that much voltage, you're degrading the hardware.
Yeah.
It does seem like a poorly named feature.
It is a terrible name for that feature. Yeah.
Yeah. We were thinking about actually doing a video around that because
fail safe to hit higher clocks is like, oh, you want to hit higher clocks? This is the way to get higher clocks. We are going to juice this processor up really, really well.
Yeah. But, and it turns out you can juice the processor up to the point that it stops working in like 3 or 4 yeah. months if you use that.
Well, and another thing to note, and it was said in the NVIDIA patch notes, was unlocked parts. So I think this points to another thing of like, hey, you know, how high is it pushing clocks? Because obviously locked parts, it sticks at that default. I mean, whatever, there's other ways to get around it, but for the most part, unlocked parts seem to be, you know, having some sort of increase in frequency, voltage, you know, power, whatever, causing it to have some sort of, problem that'll leads to an error or a crash.
Yeah, but I mean,
it's weird. Like we've definitely gone round and round and thought about it and trying to figure it out. So it's been an interesting one.
Well, and it's hard to know exactly like where to point the finger here, right? Like we're in Spider-Man yeah. pointing fingers at each right. other territory, because like The motherboard vendors definitely have a little have some culpability here by basically shipping every high by shipping every high end motherboard in such a way that it's going to overclock the CPU whether you mean to or not, right? Like the default settings for like my, the motherboard I was using for even this the same like they all are shipping overclocked even if you don't set the XMS profiles at this point, which is crazy. At the same time, there's a feature called the Intel Failsafe SVID setting in there, which controls the voltages. And that's pretty high, too. Like that. But also, the fact that Epic and Oodle and all these places are saying, hey, if you're having these kinds of crashes, which is the first place you find now, it's telling you to do this thing that's going to degrade the life of your chip. That seems like a potential problem. Now, and Intel almost certainly deserves some culpability because they're having memory controller problems in a seemingly wide spectrum of CPUs right now. So
yeah, I think the problem with this whole thing, and this has been going on for many, many months. I mean, I think we first picked up on it in December-ish, right?
November. I don't remember. Yeah. We started talking about it, yeah, a long time ago.
And it had been, you know, honestly, this came to us through a friend that Will and I know who had problems, and he'd flagged it to me because he was having issues, and he came around to believe that it's a CPU issue. I don't know exactly what the problem is, but he firmly believes it's CPU issues. But the problem is nobody really knows what it is at this point. And it's, even though months and months and months have been going on and now it's sort of, it feels like it's boiling over. One thing I think people should do is, you know, hold on, don't overreact, don't freak out. It's obviously some people are fine. Some people are not fine. It is really confusing. We don't really know what is going on. So I would not overreact. If you want to play it safe, you know, clock everything down a little bit.
Undervolted
or clock it down, a bit to make a little safe. But I think we need to hang on and wait to see what the actual information is because no one really knows what it is. But there's definitely a lot of smoke here. And there's actually, to me, the thing that's a little scary is it could indicate there could be an issue that requires way more of a problem. It was like, so one theory is that the CPUs are just, the margins are being pushed way too hard on these chips, right? So maybe they're early bins of the chip and maybe they weren't so great, but they got pushed out and now they're basically crashing in these games. So how do you solve that? If it's really widespread, we're just looking at theories here. Does this end up in a lawsuit where somebody says like, hey, these chips are not stable at the advertised clock, right? That could be a real problem. But, you know, it's also it could also be something simple as like we've identified it down to 2% of K parts. If you have problems, contact us. We'll get you a new one. That'll solve it.
I mean, so the thing I will say is I've sent one 1300K back already. The second one's going to go back soon unless we've been talking to some people who might want it. We'll see. They were really, like, they no hassle at all on the RMA. Like, they flipped it around. I had the new processor in, like, 3 days. They sent me a box to send the old one back in, and I was back in business. Before there was like it was no problem. So if you have an affected processor, you should I would recommend you RMA it. If you don't have an affected processor, I would look at your voltages, make sure your SVID settings are reasonable. Make sure your voltages going to the CPU are reasonable, and probably hang tight and just keep an eye peeled for problems.
I mean, and I do think there is a larger discussion around all this, even if you don't have an affected part. Or a part that could be affected. I mean, there still needs to be a larger conversation about motherboards pushing things harder and faster and flying close to the sun, right? I mean, that's something we've talked about for years, is that motherboard manufacturers are trying to push the limit to get that extra little bigger bar better, right? And while that works, at the same time, it feels like we're flying a little too close to the sun in some ways. And is it worth it? I don't know.
But again, we don't really know if that's the actual cause, or, you know, because, you know, motherboard makers, they don't just simply make stuff up and like punch it out and push it out to everybody.
No.
They understand if they blow things up, it's a problem. So I kind of wonder if, you know, they do their own internal testing. They have guidance from the chip makers, and then they sort of know where they want to push the margins on these things. I don't know if that's they basically built their models like, we can push this margin. Here's the advice. And then as time went on and actually more parts got out there, it turned out like, oh, no, actually, these chips are not bending out the same way we expected them to. And we're pushing them a little too hard. So, again, I just want to caution people not to freak out and to jump on the, you know, the pony and start screaming at about it. There's clearly a lot of smoke. Everybody should pay attention to it. It's the reason why we've been talking about it for quite a while now. But, you know, we don't really know, again, who to scream at this point, or what the fix is. So hopefully, you know, it we get information and it turns out it's small, and it doesn't turn out to be, again, like the thing that kind of like is like, oh, like an oh crap kind of moment is like, oh damn, like a large majority of these high end K parts, they are not going to bend out at the clocks we expected them to. Then you have a major problem, because now you got, you know, like the lawyers are going to like, huh? Hey, they're going to pop up like, hey. So we don't know, but, you know, so just hold on a little bit. But, you know, again, if you want to play it safe, clock your chip down a little bit. It looks like at least the RMA process works, but it sucks. Like, say, if you built custom water loop, I recently built a custom water loop. Digging that CPU out of there would be no fun.
Yeah. So. Well, and like my takeaway from this is that I do, like, looking at what happened with the multi-core enhancement stuff, the stock overclocking from the motherboard vendors. I would love to see on next wave of motherboards a yo, I want to run this at stock button in there. I don't think that's an unreasonable ask. I think leave the overclocking and overvolting options in for the people who want them, for sure. I'm not saying we should take that away, but I think there should be an easy way to say, hey, run everything at stock and maybe to crank up the memory because I'm buying overclocked memory, right? Like, I don't think that's an unreasonable ask.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I think that's not a bad idea. Unfortunately, most motherboard vendors are not, you don't get rewarded by making people feel, you know, safe and fuzzy. Usually you get rewarded like you win. You're the top of the list, bigger bar better. You see a site or website that does reviews of motherboards and your motherboard is the number one, you're going to get, hey, good job there. You're not going to get like, oh, called out and get a good performance review because, oh, by the way, you put in a really, really safe, some really good guardrails into this motherboard. Nobody gives a damn about that, unfortunately. And that's maybe something that the review community should pay attention to, because if that is something that people want, then it's something the motherboard makers will do. But I don't honestly think that's what people care about, because we live every day. You watch the YouTube videos, you look at the reviews, it's all about bigger bar better. It's like the one that's at the top of the list, the one that's winning, it's faster. It's always about speed. Oh my God, 700X3D. You're stupid for buying anything else, right? I think hardware makers just simply, they understand that's what moves people to buy product, not putting guardrails in. So that's something the hardware community needs to pay attention to, I think.
I disagree a little bit on that. I think people, it's not like mutually exclusive. I think people want both. I think they want the performance with the assumption that everything is going to work out okay. So I think what Will's proposing is more about, if things are not going to be okay, then you like having the easier ability to guarantee that things will be okay, especially if you're having problems and you're trying to troubleshoot. So I don't really see them as like different conflicting desires, especially given the segment we're talking about, because they're spending a lot of money on those motherboards. We're not talking about cheap, like, well, you know, $100 motherboards.
Yeah,
if you're
going to
be dropping, if you're dropping that much money on a motherboard, why wouldn't you expect the extra feature?
Well, I guess what I would say is you're buying a 1400K, 1400KS, you're buying an $800 motherboard, you're buying, you know, 8,200 RAM, you're buying big-ass SSDs, you're buying a $500 case, you do custom water loop, and then you want to run that thing absolute less than bone stock, that's probably pretty rare.
So. No, actually, we have a lot of people in our Discord, like VC Jester, who undervolt. I mean,
That's what you call. If you use your computer for work and not just playing games, I would much rather have. I'm paying for quiet and reliability, not 3% extra performance. Right?
Yeah.
I also think we need to talk about defaults though too, because it's one thing to have it out of the box experience of it pushing hard. It's another thing to go in, know what you're doing, and say, hey, you know what? Actually, I do want more performance out of it. I mean, the same thing applies with XMP profiles. You know, so RAM, like, you know, like treat it that same kind of way where, hey, you know what? Out of the box experience, it's going to be stable. But if you want to go in and turn some stuff up, boom, you've got that ability.
And that's it for me. My desire is that you start with, hey, here's the base perf, right? Your stock clocks. The issue I have is this. Oh, surprise. We overclocked all this stuff and we didn't say anything about it. And it's buried in like 55 menus that no normal human is going to understand.
Or Gordon, we've went back and forth all the time. Like, hey, do we review CPUs with Intel's PL1 and PL2, or do we review CPUs with the out of the box motherboard experience? Right. Which usually is the sky's the limit on power draw.
Yeah, and I would argue for going for high power settings because, you know, arguably as a reviewer, you don't have a lot of time to test a CPU. I go for, you know, basically the higher performance profiles, and I think it matches up with the reality, again, of somebody who's buying high-end hardware for the most part. But I do admit there are a lot of people, and this is... There is a misunderstanding where people assume that everybody who buys an unlocked CPU is going to overclock the hell out of that thing. The vast majority of people never overclock anything. So, you know, bone stock is what you're going to get. Well, bone stock out of the box is probably what most people are going to be running on their boards. So that's really the reality I try to get to.
Well, and, you know, what is bone stock? Are we talking about? Because Intel bone stock would be a PL1, PL2 of, you know, 253, but the motherboard bone stock is MCE, or we're picking on ASUS, but, you know, MCE on, which unlocks those wattages. So which stock is stock?
Well, that's, you know, like part. a lot of the boards now, the way they handle it, I'm sure we've seen, you bring up a new board, it posts, it goes, do you have air cooler? Do you have a small rad? Do you have a big rad? And then you pick your big rad because you've got a big ass 420 millimeter rad. And then they basically pick, you know, 4096, right? Unlimited power. So that's, to me, is like, you know, if I'm running a large rad and I'm running it at max fans, I'm going to pick the profile that I'm sort of assuming most consumers are going to do that are building a system. So I'm not going to go and set, you know, lock down, you know, PL settings. So I just think that's kind of silly in a lot of ways, especially because it is a high performance part and you're handcuffing it. So you do want to see it perform at its best. And the problem now is we have this mismatch where these chips are, again, we don't know how many. It could be a very small sample. We don't know. It could be something that's festering that could get worse over time. Again, we don't know. But, where the hell was I going with this? You just want to know what the performance is out of that chip, I think.
Well, for a review, yeah. But for, you know, if you have crashes during benchmarking when you're doing a CPU review like that, do you mention that? Does that come up?
Oh, of course.
Okay.
Yeah. Because, you know, if you can't get stable runs while testing, then it's like, what's wrong here?
Yeah.
And then that becomes a problem. Actually, it's really funny because, and again, the reason why, and again, let's not overreact. We don't know what the answers are. So, you know, everybody, you know, just take it easy. But on the Hardware Unboxed podcast, I recommend, it's a great podcast. You can listen to it. Steve was talking about something that I hadn't thought about in a long time. And that is, I don't know if you remember, Will, do you remember the original Pentium 3 Was it a
533?
No, it was a 1.16 gigahertz part.
Oh, yeah, that's so, the one that didn't really ship, right? Like they made
well,
like eight
of those. Well, it did ship. It shipped out to reviewers, and I will shout out to go. It went out to reviewers. They said, I got one. And, you know, because I was on a magazine, so you're basically always behind. Basically, what happened, and this is pretty cool, this is collaboration did happen in the 1990s.
It was early 2000s. Probably right.
I'm trying to think. Well, because it was like it was pre Pentium 4, right at the end of Pentium 3. So maybe
it was when I was at
probably
MSPC.
When like yeah. It was probably 99 ish. You know, probably 90, 98. I can't remember exactly. Somebody look. But the cool thing was Kyle Bennett of Hard OCP, his 1.16 gigahertz Pentium 3 was giving him all kinds of problems. Like, what the hell's going on? And he reached out to, I think it was Tom's Hardware, to see if they were having problems with their sample, and they were also having problems with their sample. And they basically, but they compared notes, and then they went to Intel, and then Intel said, oh, what's going on here? And at the end of that, Intel basically, they said, you know what? That 1.16 gigahertz 533 front side bus Pentium 3, never mind. Don't review it. We're not going to sell it, right? They basically said, no, we're not going to sell this part because, you know, the reviewers have found something that's a show-stopping bug on this is not worth going the distance on. So basically, they recall the part. They never sold it, and I think the 1 gigahertz was the max Pentium 3 part that came out.
Huh.
Well, they ended up clocking up later, but it was as like a Pentium. It was when they were doing Pentium's post, right? It was like they produced the process side later on.
That was the end
or whatever.
They moved on to Pentium 4, I think was the, you know, because like I think that was probably part of the math there. But you know, the reason why it has some similarities is the competition with Intel and AMD and Athlon was like hot and heavy, right? Because in AMD beat them to 1 gigahertz. You got to beat them, right? You got to beat them. You know, you got to keep the shareholders happy. You got to keep the media happy. You got to keep the hype going. And they pushed out this part that they thought that their own internal validation said was something they could sell to consumers. In the end, they said, no, actually, we can't sell this because, by the way, we understand FDIF bug. We don't want to eat $1 billion of recalled parts. We're not going to sell this thing. It sort of has familiarities to that in a way. But again, we can't overreact because we don't know what it is. It could be a very, very simple thing. Like there, I had some theories early on where I thought maybe this is related to the memory controller, the IMC in the chip, because the OODL thing, it was failing a lot of compression, right? It was compression, decompression. I was like, maybe this is IMC related. I don't know. Cause you know,
I mean,
that, I just want to say like, that is the thing that just scared the Long Gordon story over. That's the one thing that scares the hell out of me. Like, holy crap. What if this is like, what if we have to recall K parts again? We don't know, but like if it's that bad,
I mean,
that would be spectacularly bad, right?
For Intel, yeah. Yeah.
But this does make me think, and I've had this thought before. Why does it feels like the reaction is different this time? Because last year we had the voltages on AMD boards, right? The year before that, we have 12 volt high power. By all accounts, we're talking about something that's, you know, not running as intended, and there are reports of it. You know, legitimate number of reports, but the outrage pony doesn't seem to be riding as hard this time. Is it because the consequences aren't as disastrous as maybe the other two things? But that's the only thing I could point to. I'm not quite sure.
You mean on this versus the voltage?
Yeah, on this versus voltage or 12 volt high power. Because at this point, like it feels like the amount of affected users is, you know, at least anecdotally similar. Or maybe even more, because I think
we're just starting to crack the surface of this one. Probably.
I mean, but it's been out for months. Where I feel like the 12 volt high power, like you know, when two people reported in Reddit, all of a sudden it's just people were off to the races.
Yeah, I think some of that is, you know, NVIDIA has a pile on problem, right? People want to pile on NVIDIA because they're unhappy with the prices of their GPUs. So that was part of it. I also do think the reason why this one is a smoldering issue rather than sort of a burning issue is because it is really, for every person that has a problem, there's five that don't have a problem, it feels like, or 10 that don't have a problem. So it does feel like it's very small, and it also feels like nobody knows. It's like, why is it doing it here? And then why is it doing it there? And it feels like every single answer is a little bit different of why people are having problems. Like the friend that we had that flagged it to me originally, he basically was able to fix it by, you know, recompiling all the shaders, clocking it down a little bit, and went away, or basically sticking to, you know, bone stock and getting rid of all the shaders, the compiled shaders, and that basically solved his problem. And it's just, it's very different for every person, it feels like. So it's not like it's like one thing. Like, you know when you have a melted 12-volt high power connector.
But also, that's new. The 12-volt high power connector was new.
Yeah.
And people don't like things that are new and kind of seemingly unnecessary.
Yeah. Well, but
whereas this is just, like, this is a little more amorphous.
Yeah, well, and maybe the 12-volt high power thing is not as analogous, but last year's AMD thing with the voltage stuff, like, that seems more analogous, and, like, you know, people were really worried about that. Oh, my God, my AMD CPU is killing itself because of voltages, and, you know, there was a lot of investigation and a lot of intense debate around it, even though, you know, I don't know how many people actually got affected, but it feels like there's more people getting affected by this Intel thing than the AMD thing last year.
So here's the thing. I think we're at the point now, the YouTube hardware folks are starting to talk about this. There was a Verge article last week,
which I linked to in the description.
Yeah. I think we're at the bottom of the hockey stick part of the curve right now on people being aware of this problem. And my guess is that we're going to start seeing people who are like, oh man, I get a lot of Fortnite crashes. I've noticed that too. Or I get a lot of Tekken crashes, or I get a lot of whatever. To your point though, Gordon, about the memory controller, EAC and OODL, both of those problems would indicate memory problems, whether it's memory itself or the memory controller. Like, presumably the slightly better memory controller in the 14,000 series is going to have a little bit of an impact on reducing that. My guess is we see more 13 series chips that are having problems in the future.
And I thought I saw a news post saying that 13th gen is no longer being sold. Yeah. So,
which is pretty soon for a fairly recent part, but I guess, to be honest,
I mean, 14th gen was
the same,
refresh.
Same chip, man.
It lives on. It lives on. So
12th gen V3 coming up this fall.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, speaking of stuff that's coming up, we do have some new Intel CPUs to talk about. Intel had what was the name of their event?
Vision 2024
event. Yes. Intel CEO Pat Gelsinger showed off a Lunar Lake processor on stage there. So there's stuff to talk about around that. But then there also has been some leaks around what Arrow Lake on desktop might look like. I linked to both of these in the description if you want to follow along. Gordon, you want to start off with Lunar Lake, because that's what has been talked about officially?
Yeah, I mean, they're basically showing off Lunar Lake, which, as I understand it, going to go into mobile. As you can guess, it was an AI event. It was all about AI, and I want to give credit to Paul Alcorn at Tom's Hardware. Go read his story. Tom's Hardware does great stuff. Paul does excellent coverage of the PC community, and they're basically saying it's going to, let's find the, how many TOPS is it going to be? Because it's all about the TOPS.
What are TOPS, Gordon?
100 plus TOPS of AI performance.
Yes, it will. The Lunar Lake at Vision 2024 will exceed 100 plus TOPS of performance in AI workloads, with 45 of those TOPS coming from the NPU alone. That's triple the AI performance of of Intel's current gen chips and meets the bar of 45 TOPS from the NPU that the company recently discussed during its AI summit in Taipei.
Well, yeah, real quick, this was an interesting thing. I saw them talking about next-gen AI PCs, which seems to be early because we just barely started this gen of AI PCs. But they were like, oh, in order for it to be next-gen, it's got to hit this bar. And it's like, wait, it seems to be.
Is this NPC, AI PC? Like, is this like the arms NPC race. Spec where you have to have a 2X CD-ROM drive in here?
Oh, boy. Wouldn't that be cool? We got back to the 2X, 4X CD-ROM days.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and then they're saying like, hey, you know, hey, compare this to AMD's current gen Ryzen Hawkpoint performance, which is only 16 TOPS, which is below the bar for next gen AI PCs. Like,
what's a TOPS, Adam?
What does it stand for, Gordon? I already forgot.
Trillions of operations per second. I've been in Carbonite for 7 months, so I don't. I'm trying to desperately catch up on everything, but I would like to know what the fixation with the NPU performance is. Now, for people don't know, Meteor Lake, you have AI performance that can be done, acceleration that can be done in the graphics, the GPU. It can be done in the main CPU cores. And then also they have these very, very lightweight, low-power AI cores tucked into what we'd probably traditionally call a Southbridge. It's basically the low power IO chip that controls all the plumbing on the CPU, as I understand it. And the concept is you don't have to crank up the GPU, you don't have to crank up the CPU, again, because that saves power. So you can actually really do a lot of AI workloads on the NPU, which I was trying to understand, like, what the hell is this like push to have such high NPU performance? Because it sort of implies you could do AI acceleration at, again, in excess of 45 TOPS on the NPU. Why do you need low power AI performance?
I mean, anybody? For battery life, right? Efficiency is kind of what they have been trying to tout. Is that because that has been the weird thing, right? Is that you can do a lot of AI related workloads across all three pillars, and by pillars I mean CPU, GPU, NPU. But the story so far, at least as I understand it, is that the NPU is the most efficient one. Sure, you might not get the max theoretical performance out of an NPU, but you're going to get the most efficient performance out of the NPU, which it matters for mobile for sure. That hasn't been talked necessarily around desktop NPU performance. We can talk about that later, but also still back to that original thing, like, you know, an AI PC, you know, this is all in service of an AI PC. And I feel like that story is still hasn't fully been fleshed out of like, what is an AI PC? What constitutes that? What are you actually going to do with it? That's still kind of.
Yeah. I mean, so what they're saying is what they're promising is, hey, we're going to give you neural processing units that will let you do things like voice recognition and image search and stuff like that native on your PC without having to go dump that data out to the cloud, which is both good for privacy and performance, both, right? That's exciting. I assumed that this stuff was for training. I assume there is a little bit of training involved in that because it's going to parse whatever's on your computer. But beyond that, this should be just like, this is giving you parity with what's been in ARM processors and phones for the last 5 years at this point, right? With more performance.
Yeah, I kind of wonder if that's what I will. But the thing is that it sort of implies that you want all this NPU AI performance because your laptop will constantly be listening and processing what you're doing. So you could, you don't have to have it crank up the big fat GPU cores and, you know, haul the battery life down. So it feels like Windows 12 or whatever the hell we're going to get is going to be this, you know, AI enabled OS that's just constantly like doing everything in the background. And that's why they need all this AI performance. That's sort of what I'm guessing is the world we're rushing to. Is that something PC people are going to accept, though? Or is it something they only accept on their phones?
Well, I think there's also a place. I think there's also places for, like, Adobe is clearly invested in this, right? Like, they're building all sorts of AI filters. Like, you can take a picture, rotate it, and then get an AI image generation, which is supposedly trained on non-copyrighted works, right? to fill in the edges of the thing that you've created by rotating your picture rather than to crop in. So, like, I think that there's a million potential use cases for them. I don't think most of them are very good is where I end up. I think we're putting a lot of silicon in these computers that is like, being able to talk to my computer, that's great. Like having good voice recognition, like I have on my phone, or having the ability to grab text out of an image on the PC, like I can with my phone. Those both sound great. Being able to search, do a context aware search of what's inside a photo. That sounds fantastic. The generative stuff I can take or leave. And I think that's where most of this, like that's the stuff they always talk about in the context of AI PC and AI PC movement.
Well, I mean, the thing is, though, is that Gordon's asking if people want this or not. I don't think anyone who's going to benefit from it is actually asking that. I think with AI, the most applicable use cases for it in terms of being practical and useful is stuff that's going to be invisible to us. You know what I mean? So I think that the fact that this silicon is going to be existing in these PCs is kind of, I hate to negate the whole discussion we're having, but to me, it's a bit of a non-starter for a discussion, just because I think that all the things that they're marketing to us, yeah, they're not really going to pan out the way that they're being sold. But all the things that it's going to improve, people aren't going to actually really realize that's what's happening in the background. And I guess you could ask any person on the street, do you want this in your PC? And they'll say, I think it's a waste of space, so not actually knowing what it's doing. So I think in this case, I don't know if that's a fair question to ask of people to get an accurate response of whether or not it's useful.
That's why this whole announcement seems so you know, interesting, especially for them to throw Meteor Lake under the bus and be like, that's only 10 tops. Look at this next gen thing. Like, you definitely want this thing. It's like, wait, how many people even have Meteor Lake at this point? You know, how many people are thinking about this?
I also feel like this is something that, you know, Gordon would have pointed out previously, but I think maybe we're just caught up in the actual technology part. Mm-hmm. But a lot of these announcements aren't geared towards the end users. They're geared towards shareholders, you know, the people who are in the financial industry, right? True. So you're always coming out with saying, like, look how our products are getting better and more appealing, right? So...
yeah,
almost like a marketing point.
But well, not marketing for consumers, right? They're talking to the analysts, they're talking to other people. And then Gordon can talk more about this than I can. But I think that's another thing that we're potentially missing on this conversation.
Yeah, no, I agree with Elena, because I swear to God, like, at the keynote where Jensen, you know, talking about AI at Computex last year, every time he said AI, the stock went up like $10. It's like, every time you say it.
Actually, good point. You know what? You're right. I totally did not even think about that. Like,
it really is. I mean, that's the reason why every single company, it seems like it. This isn't true, because they've been working on these initiatives for a long, long, long time. But it feels like somehow, you know, NVIDIA becoming a multi-trillion dollar company has kicked off this chase for investors' money that is sort of turbocharged the push for AI. Again, people don't think that Intel, AMD, and NVIDIA have not been pushing this stuff for a long time. It just is way more important now, because there's so much money at stake. And you know, anytime you get Wall Street excited about it, they start throwing money like somebody drunk at a bar, right? Yeah. Like, I don't even know if you can say. Well, you know, I guess you can say it's like somebody drunk at a stripper bar. They start tossing dollars at everybody, and. You got to do that. It's for investors, but also, you know, I think we can't discount how powerful it can be and transformative for the PC. Because I was just talking with Mark Hockman about this, and you know, I miss a lot of technology announcements over the last few months. But like, Microsoft talked about AI Explorer that's going to be rolled out in Windows 11 later this year, and to me, I look forward to the day where I can get on my PC and do a search and actually have it find something. Right? Like, wouldn't you actually like your PC to find something? Well, like, and if AI lets you, if my local AI, my 45 tops or 100 tops laptop can go through and index all my files, and then I can just say, hey, where's that report I was writing about at the time? Also, I was and I, if you can't locate it at the same time I was browsing for, you know, donuts, and then if my computer can find it, wouldn't that be like really nice on a PC? Be nice. Because I mean, like, it feels like we've had decades of like it can't find anything, you know?
That's what they're selling, though, right? Like, I think that's one of the more practical use cases they have been selling, where you're supposed to be saying, like, bring up that financial report I was working on last week, and it's supposed to just give you, like, all the things. Or if you say, like, look for a document with the word pejorative in it, I don't know, something like that. Like, that's the kind of searches that I'm doing. It's a kind of, it's like the, what they call them, natural language type queries we pose to each other, where you're like, hey, who's that guy who always wears that baseball cap, but it's like cocked that way? You know, like, that's how we ask each other questions, because we don't always remember exactly, like, specific dimensions or specs of something.
Well, and the benefit of doing this on local hardware is you don't have to send it up to the cloud, so you're not giving faceless multinational corporations access to your entire, like, all your data in order to get this benefit. The thing I want to know is, when did they start with this AI PC thing? When did this, hey, is this a new initiative that came out of this talk? Because it seems like they're trying to establish they're trying to Centrino some business is what it feels like, but without making a name. They need to make a name that is not really a word. Maybe all those are taken up by the drug companies at this point, but yeah, like, right?
I think Intel Innovation last year was where they really pushed, like, hey, AI PCs, we're bringing AI PCs. I mean, AMD was early with the NPU. They were the first ones to market to have an NPU on both laptop and desktop. But I don't remember AMD pushing the term AI PC as hard as Intel did at Innovation.
Okay.
So, yeah, I feel like Meteor Lake is kind of, you know, the introduction of the third pillar, the NPU. Yeah.
You know, but, you know, natural language processing has been around for a long, long, long time. I remember Alex St. John talking about Intel trying to develop, you know, natural language processing back in that, you know, in the forever days ago, and it was a battle between Microsoft and Intel because Microsoft didn't want Intel really to do any of it. And I think, you know, of course that predates all of our, you know, conceptual AI, machine learning and all that stuff, but it's always been there. It's just not capable of, the hardware was never capable of doing it, but now we're actually getting to the point where with the developments in the hardware, we can actually do these things that people have dreamed about for many, many, many years on the PC.
And I still am curious to see how that translates to the desktop side, right? Because if the NPU, that third pillar right now, is all about efficiency, then, you know, that matters less on the CPU side, and I feel, or on the desktop side, and I feel like if they're going to take up more, we don't know the layouts of, you know, whatever's coming next. We can talk about Arrow Lake leaks, but the idea is that, oh, hey, they're going to take away die space that would traditionally have, you know, fat CPU cores to add in some NPU performance in there. I feel like most of the power users are going to be angry about
that. Well, but if it's connected to the Southbridge, who cares, right?
Potentially. We don't know.
Yeah,
we don't know how this is going to look. I mean, there are leaks. So one of the leaks, I got a link over to video cards. There were some leaks around Arrow Lake desktop. There were some leaks around the mobile part as well. But you know, for our discussion, we can talk about the desktop parts. And one of the big things is that hey, do you remember, Gordon? Do you remember when what was it? Rocket Lake came out with no hyperthreading. Was that Rocket Lake?
No, Rocket Lake had hyperthreading. It was when they eliminated on Core i7. You know, they did a product stack change, and they basically said, "Oh, you previously got hyperthreading on this level of CPU, and you're not going to get it anymore." But they did have it on i-end.
Oh, okay.
But they have not eliminated. I mean, the only chips that I can think of that don't have it are, you know, your E cores and also,
true,
you know, your little crappy Atom-based
throw me in
processors. Those are the only times I can think of, like, they had to throw out hyperthreading. So, but there are rumors that it will be gone with Arrow Lake, right?
Yeah, that we're talking about, you know, what is this?
And Lunar Lake, apparently.
Yeah, right. I mean, that would be a paradigm shift in itself, well, right? To say, hey, we're getting rid of hyperthreading.
We have so many cores now, though. Is the overhead of is it a point where the overhead of hyper-threading on a per core basis isn't worth the benefit you get, because you can just actually give everything its own thread now, right? Its own core, every thread, or the important threads, their own cores.
I guess. I mean, you know, hyperthreading does bring real performance depending on the application. So it does feel like on the face of it, getting rid of hyperthreading feels like a step back for some people. But they have showed off, you know, MJ showed off a Lunar Lake die. The Lunar Lake is won't even come out to the end of this year, but
and will that be mobile first again?
Lunar. As I understand it, Lunar will looks like, and it's on based on maybe what 20A, right? So Intel 20 angstrom, and then Arrow Lake as well. But I think we don't know until, you know, they've sort of previewed the hardware it's running, which is, again, that makes Wall Street feel really, really good. Like, hey, they got a chip. They showed it off. You know, here's the money. Continue to have our money, right? That's the main thing it does. And it also makes the vendors feel good because OEM's like, okay, you're going to have something. I do think that I don't think Intel's going to necessarily want to take a big enough step backwards by getting rid of hyperthreading. So we won't know till the chip comes out. These are new architectures, microarchitectures that will be coming out with these things. It's entirely possible that they've said, hey, you know what? We've decided to do this with the cores and we're getting better performance than we are with hyperthreading, so we're gonna not use it this generation, right? So we don't know. So I don't think people should immediately do the usual freak out, oh my god, there's no hyperthreading. But last week you were saying hyperthreading sucks. I was, but now I'm freaked out because they're getting rid of Hyper-3. You know,
And I'm sorry, I'm thinking about the 10th gen and 11th gen, where 11th gen had less cores, but it was clocked up, so you got more performance, but people felt bad because, oh wow, I've got less cores.
Yeah, no, and people really did freak out because you could get a 10 core 10850K for $350. That's what really screwed up the Rocket Lake launch. Yep. And you know, in my testing, not everybody's testing agreed with it because it depended on how you tested the chip. Again, how you set the motherboard up. I went for out of the box cranked up performance, and in my test, the 8-core Rocket Lake part often exceeded the 10-core. Comet Lake part easily in performance most of the time. So I didn't have a problem with it, because people who think like, oh, just more cores is better, it's like, well, not necessarily. So I think it's entirely possible, even though people are like, there may be a step back in core count in these new chips. But again, I don't think they want to give up performance. But let's hope. I mean, we don't know, because it's entirely possible that, you know, they're so caught up in the AI hype that, you know what? We're giving you way more performance in AI. That's not going to be something accepted by most people.
Right. Yeah.
Well, it's not going to be visible for most people, right? Like, are your voice queries are going to come back faster? Woo.
I mean, maybe by then, who knows?
Because if you're a 3D modeler, you're like, oh, I really would like, you know, you're going to be like, I need a 14900K now because I got to get it before they go out of fashion, you know? So,
Well, we have friend of the show, Brett from UFD Tech in the chat. Hello, Brett. Hopefully we're gonna see it at Computex. Let me know. Maybe do a video. It says, is Lunar Lake just Meteor Lake V2?
I'm looking at the Meteor Lake is what, Intel 7? This is possibly a different process. This is the summaries that I'm seeing out there. It will be based on a new P-Core. So Redwood Cove for Meteor Lake. This is Lion Cove. And then for the E-cores, it's the Meteor Lake is Crestmont. This is Skymont. And this will be Battle Mage instead of Alchemist, apparently. Those are all the rumors.
Rumors, yeah.
And I think I've also read that this is, you know, a lot of people saying this is Jim Keller's design. We don't know. I don't know if that's true or not. And again, you know, that's a lot of people probably ascribe way too much to one person in a company of 100,000. But this chip will be quite a bit different, and especially if you're getting to in excess of 100 TOPS versus whatever we got out of Meteor, right?
So 10 is what they're saying.
It feels like Meteor is closer to Ice Lake, which was, you know, it had its issues. And then this might be beyond a better step in performance for Intel, hopefully.
Yeah. Curious. Lots of questions out there. Brad isn't on the show today, so, you know, we got to talk a little bit about leaks. Just kidding. I'm not a huge leak fan myself. But, yeah.
But, you know, they showed it off. It's not necessarily a leak.
Well, Arrow Lake. Arrow Lake is still in
new socket, right? 1851.
Yeah. More.
LGA 1851.
Bigger socket better? Is that...
I know people hate it, but sometimes I think it's not always bad because you don't have people running ancient ass motherboards missing half the modern features because they don't want to let go of that $182 motherboard they bought, you know, 6 years ago. So
true. Well, that's it for Intel stuff. Or is there anything else? Any last thoughts to dump in?
No, I mean, I think the last thing to remember is for Lunar Lake, they're going up against Intel is worried about not only what AMD, they're always worried about what AMD is doing, but they're very worried about what Qualcomm is doing with this Snapdragon Elite part. You know, there's rumors that Apple's going to be introducing an M4 already. They just introduced M3, a few months ago? So there's talks of an M4 based, you know, and Apple jumping on the AI train as well. So it's going to be all AI talk, and the vast majority of the market is focused on laptops, which is what most people buy. So I kind of wonder for like Arrow Lake if it'll be more conventional. So Arrow Lake, I feel like we'll push you to the integrated GPU cores for your AI performance, and most desktop, you know, red meat eaters will be running a big fat GPU, so you'll do your AI performance on your big fat GPU. So why? Let's not even screw around with these other kind of low power things, because you don't care. You don't care about this low power AI stuff.
Well, speaking of power, let's move on to the next discussion about performance, specifically around games. I will say that this topic was brought up by a friend of the show, Ivan R, over on Discord. We have a channel over there about like potential topic ideas and things like that. That's separate from like questions. And they dropped this little thought nugget in there. What is the next optimal smooth FPS spot after 60? I think a lot of gamers will feel that 60 is too low. So what should be the next threshold? Or are all frame rates fake and we should just call it simulation?
look, man, film runs at 24 frames a second. That's right, all anybody ever needs.
And, you know, we did have a discussion in that channel about this topic. And I think before we get into actual numbers, I think there is a larger discussion of like at least that part of that question is, I think a lot of gamers will feel that 60 is too low. And I feel like most gamers are probably still targeting 60, right?
If you look at what the Steam hardware survey says, most gamers are still targeting 60.
Well, and most TVs. So yeah. Like, you know, sure. Console gamers, like, you know, most TVs I feel like are still 60. So like, I feel like 60 is entrenched in gaming in general. So, I feel like that's just I should put this out there. Gordon, do you agree? Do you feel like 60 is actually where most people play right now?
I would agree that the vast majority of people who play games on PC have zero idea what the difference is. So 60 hertz is probably what they're shooting for. I do think more advanced people are going for higher frame rates on higher refresh panels. But the vast majority, are simply... They take it out of the box, they plug it in the wall, they hit the power button. So,
Elena, would you agree that 60 is the predominant frame rate that most people play at, console and PC?
I mean, I don't know if this is a question of agreeing or not, just because we have some data that indicates what people are targeting. I feel like the spirit of the question is more of like philosophically, what do we think is like the sweet spot? Regardless of what people's financial realities constrain them to.
Well, but I think that's why I'm trying to set it up a little bit, because I feel like, hey, we need to remember that not everyone has access to high refresh rate panels or you know, super heavy hardware that can push that kind of stuff. We need to remember that the majority of people are playing at stuff that you're not, right? I guess that's what I'm trying to establish here.
Well, the other thing that we often don't think about in this context is that there's an enormous variation in people's ability to discern things visually.
True.
Right? Like your ability to, my ability to determine frame rate, to detect frame rate inconsistencies in yours and Gordon's and Elena's are probably all wildly different. There was actually a study a couple weeks ago that came out where they tested people to see how sensitive they were to refresh rates just by blinking a light at different speeds. Mm-hmm. And some people were able to detect much, much, much higher frame rates than others. So, or blink rates of that monitor, mm-hmm. which is why some people see LEDs as flickery and some people don't notice that at all. Mm-hmm. So the breadth of human experience here is broad, and for some people 60 hertz may be fine, and for some people 120 may feel flickery, and like, yeah, your mileage may vary as a human.
Well, yeah, I guess you know, to my next thought on this topic was to answer that question that Ivan is posing, or answer one of the questions that Ivan is posing. I think a lot of gamers will feel that 60 is too low. Do we actually agree with that statement, that a lot of gamers think 60 is just too low? I just can't do 60.
I don't think so, personally. I don't think that 60 is too low. I think 60 is now considered roughly the average for what we think of as the bottom acceptable speed. But I also think that, kind of like just, you know, differences in human hardware, so to speak, there's also differences that relate to what kind of games you play, right? So if you're playing games that don't have a lot of fast movement, you're not really going to notice that much of a difference, or you're not going to care maybe as much, even if your human hardware can discern the differences. But you're playing games where it is more prevalent that things are moving quickly and that you would want to see a smoothness in how they move that at that speed, then I think, again, the frame rates would influence what you think is a minimum acceptable spec, you know, for what you're using.
Well, and actually in the chat, we should do a poll on this. Yeah. Willis, you should set up a poll. But but we have different people in the chat. Look at this. Friend of the show, Dion, says, no, 60 is not too low. A stable 60 is what you want. And then right after that, friend of the show, Ginge Kev, said 60 is too low for just using Windows. So, you know.
Yeah.
I feel like there isn't an agreement on the 60 thing.
I did a test early on when G-Sync first launched, because G-Sync came out and it was on 120 hertz panel. And I thought, you know, 120 hertz was so much better than 60 hertz. And I actually did a test where we had two identical systems. One was a G-Sync panel. The other one is exactly the same almost, but it didn't have G-Sync. So one was 60 hertz, the other one was 120 hertz. And then I had a bunch of people in the office, you know, use both computers. There were different things. One was moving a Windows window around, which I thought immediately would be better because 120 hertz is so much smoother than a 60 hertz refresh rate. And then I had, you know, there was some gaming, and then there were some, you know, higher frame rate videos that they watched. I was really shocked at how people reacted to it, because I thought that 120 hertz was clearly better, but there were people that it was clear their brains went for what they were used to. So they thought like, oh, I like actually how it looks when I'm moving this window around in Windows, and it's just like tearing, versus, you know, 120 hertz was just so much smoother. So I do think, I agree that a lot of people just, they can interpret it. They may interpret it differently, but I personally do think 60 hertz is too low, especially on the type of game. You know, remember that thing we did at CES where we were playing high refresh rate.
It was 360 hertz.
Yeah, it was 360 hertz. It was clear that it was better. Like, so if you play Counter-Strike, you want as many frames as you can get, right? So again, it comes down to the games you play. You play World of Warships, it doesn't matter. You can lock it down to 60 hertz, it doesn't matter. But if you're playing a shooter where you have more frames means better, means you win, means you go higher up on the list. I think it's definitely better, and 60 is not enough for that person.
When NVIDIA was rolling out the 360 hertz displays a couple of years ago, I talked to a friend of mine who's a PUBG professional PUBG player, and he was like, "Yeah, the thing that I got when I switched, because they gave him one of the 360 monitors early." The thing he said is that he had one of the exercises that they did as professional Counter-Strike players and PUBG players and all that was to learn to like. Basically go ahead of and then come back on when you're aiming for like flick headshots. And he said on the 360 hertz panel he didn't have to do that adjustment himself. He could just put the dot right on the head and click and it would work itself out. The thing I'll say is that some people put a lot of value, personal self-worth, in the frame rate that they're getting. As somebody who used to get community reports for games, you'd see somebody who was writing in with a potato computer that was like, "Man, this game is crap. It came out last year and I'm running it on a computer from 2015 and I'm only getting 45 frames a second. So clearly you all have some optimization to do." And okay, in a perfect world, every computer would run every game at 60 hertz at whatever setting level at the appropriate setting level. But the thing that that most people can perceive, I believe, is the micro stutter. So if you have an average frame rate of 90 frames a second, but you have 1% of frames are running at 40 frames a second, you're going to notice that up and down way more than you would just running an average 60 hertz. So you can't look at just the average frame rate in and of itself, because a 60 average is half frames at 90 and half frames at 30. And those 30 frames per second frames are going to feel real bad. And the 90 frames per second frames aren't going to feel good, because the 30 frames per second frames are going to make everything feel chonky. So like, it's not, we've focused on frame rate as an industry for a really long time, I think to the detriment of everyone. Like when we were profiling the game, we would use frame times and look for between, 6.7 and 9 milliseconds or whatever for each frame render, because you want those numbers to be very close to each other, rather than like, it's easier to look at, hey, the average frame time is always between 6 and 9, than it is to say, oh yeah, okay, our average frame rate is 60, but we have some frames that take 14 milliseconds to render, right?
But in a competitive environment, does the micro stutter, is it better to have much, much higher frame rates and then occasional micro stutters, or is it better to have a very, very smooth but much lower frame rate?
The people that I have talked to in the past, and I'm not an expert on this, but the handful of pros that I've talked to would much rather have rock solid 144 or 180 than 360 sometimes and 60 the rest of the time.
Yeah, but that's 144. I mean, that's pretty solid. So
yeah, so. It's like the old Quake players, right? Remember when people used to turn mipmaps all the way down, so like your health boxes were just a red blur and your ammo boxes were a beige blur? People will turn down whatever they like. People run Fortnite with what is essentially the Switch renderer on 4090, so they get 360 frames solid.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
I have a follow up question to that, Will. Can you talk at all about how it works on console? Because, we have some people in chat wondering how console players deal with 30 frames per second. And I'm wondering if that's related more to the fact that it's a very even 30 versus, on PC where you might have, 1% low of like it drops down to 15, but you're getting an average of 30.
Yeah. So most of the consoles these days, you do, they'll dynamically adjust the resolution that the game's running at to hit the frame rate target. So you get a really solid frame rate, but your internal resolution, it varies from, 1080p or 4K or whatever the starting point is. And then the hardware upscaler, which is usually quite good, will upscale that dynamically. And the resolution will vary. There's a bunch of different tricks they do on consoles. I didn't spend a whole lot of time working on the console side, but that's my understanding they target a pretty stable 30. The other thing is, often on consoles you won't give people the ability to do things like turn off motion blur and stuff like that, which Foundry did a really good series a couple years ago where they looked at, I think, the last Forza Horizons game and compared 60 hertz locked, 30 hertz locked with motion blur, and like a lot of people, it turns out, preferred the motion blur because it looks a little more filmic at that frame rate with good motion blur on. So And that was, so that, I think that was the most controversial article they've ever done.
Yeah, as yeah.
for sure. Over there said.
I just have to bring up this point, though. So you're saying smooth 30 is what's good for console?
It depends on the game, Gordon. A lot, like here's the thing. 30. The Call of Duty people, the competitive multiplayer people, are always going to go for the higher frame rate because more frames gives you more precision on when you pull the trigger. You know, if you pull the trigger on a headshot on a hit scan weapon between frames, then it's, you have no idea where it's going to go. So you want to pull those triggers on the frames, and the more frames there are, the higher your likelihood of pulling the trigger on the frame.
But doesn't the aimbot on the console game fix that for you?
Oh my God,
it's a whole separate discussion.
Don't, it's a trap. It's a trap.
Call of Duty has aimbots for console for PC players that use gamepads now too. It's all bets are off.
Back to frame rates.
Smooth 30.
Well, but I mean, it also depends on the platform. We've talked that handheld. When I'm handheld gaming, as long as I have a smooth 40, I'm golden.
So
that's fine.
And for like a single player game, I think I'm playing on a handheld. I'm totally stoked at 40 hertz. This was the most surprising takeaway of my time with the Steam Deck is if I'm playing Cyberpunk at 40 frames per second on that thing, I'm thrilled. And it's not because I'm like it's on fire and I'm like getting the most out of it I can. It's because I don't. It feels no. I have a hard time distinguishing 40 solid and 60 solid, especially at that resolution.
So
I think some of that is the distance from the screen itself. Because
probably, yeah,
you're looking at. It would be like your typical gaming monitor. It would be like sitting 10 feet away from it, you know, with a handle, because you're just so far away from this little tiny screen. So most people don't have the vision to discern.
So yeah, I'm not particularly frame rate sensitive. This is one of the things that we've learned about me over the years is that I notice stutters, but I don't notice the difference between 40 and 60 and 90 like some people can immediately discern. Your mileage may vary, right? I don't find it offensive, and I don't have a hard time playing the game at that frame rate.
Yeah, I mean, that is the weird thing. Yeah, a lot of people in the chat, you know, friend of the show, Robert Lawrence, is like, no, 30 frames per second sucks. But for me, I'm fine playing a smooth 30 if, you know, depending on the game, depending on, you know, how I'm playing it, where I'm playing it, all that kind of stuff. It's like, you know, for me, it's more about the smoothness of the experience than the maximum frames I can get. I think we kind of talked about
yeah,
that.
I'm not
a competitive person, though.
Yeah.
Like, by no means, and I've always said this, I'm not a competitive person at all. So, like, I don't really care in that. For me, I'd rather more have a stable experience. Once I tune it to get it where I would want it, okay, cool. I'm good.
So, with that said, what if a game is purposely made, like, for a cinematic? It's not, you know, it's more visual than it is visual gameplay versus, you know, like, action gameplay.
Yeah.
Like, what's the optimal? You think for that?
I mean, I turn the settings all the way up and make it look as good as I possibly can,
right?
Because I really don't care. Right?
I mean,
like, I play Cyberpunk with everything jacked all the way up.
I mean, the same thing for Alan Wake.
Yeah.
You know, I just beat Alan Wake 2 finally, and yeah, like there was a lot of discussion of you know, turning everything up, and because I mean, it's a beautiful game, and especially for that with the combat, like even on my desktop, I mean, I play on a TV. My TV's 4K 120, but I intentionally locked it out 40 FPS because it was smooth, and that game is completely fine for that.
But,
so.
But at the same time, when the new Zelda came out last year, maybe the year, was the last year or year before, but anyway, I had a hard time going back to that after playing Elden Ring at 120 plus frames a second because the combat felt kind of chonky and I felt like I was missing my blocks and stuff because it was slow. Like the switches.
That one was hard. Yeah. I mean, but that was dipping down into the 20s kind of thing.
It was slow. Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny. It's just weird. Like Ivan brought this up, and we're not really getting to the meat of it. I'm sorry, Ivan, but like it, for me, it's just like, I don't know. It's so dependent where you're playing, what game you're playing, your play style. Are you the kind of person who can even perceive that stuff anyway? Like, so I think part of it is you know, people coming out and be like, well, I've got a 360 hertz monitor with a 4090, and I get to play this. You know, it's like, okay, that's awesome. But guess what? Some people don't have that, and that's okay. And as long as they're okay with that experience, then that's okay. Like,
but it is better, though. I would argue it is better. You know, the more, if you can actually get you know, stable, high refresh. It is demonstrably better, especially for shooters, right?
So I mean, unless you can't tell the difference.
Well, I think guess. For shooters, when you're playing with mouse and keyboard, there is, like, the Linus did a video with Shroud. The PUBG, NVIDIA did a bunch of marketing stuff with different professional shooter players. Like, there is a part of their thesis, which I don't know that I buy into, but I feel like I hit my headshots better at the high refresh rate monitor. And we can double blind that, A-B that if you want at some point, is that the high refresh rate monitor is reducing the benefit of that hand training, that hand eye training that like pro Counter-Strike and pro Valorant players do. I don't, like I said, I don't know that I buy that. I think it's worth experimenting with. Maybe I'm also too old for that probably to make a difference on.
I actually buy into it because I mean, I previously from doing that demo at CES, I really believed it was only for competitive players because I thought, you know, when you're basically a sucky ass gamer like me, what does it matter? But the fact that I was able to get far more headshots at 360 hertz was like, oh, okay, I could see the benefit of it. The only problem is I can't afford a 360 hertz big panel. If I could, I would, but it would be nice. Yes, but I do believe it is definitely better than having a, you know, 60 hertz panel, right?
For me, more than I care about frame rate, I care about the stutter. I care about the 1% frame rate. And if it's way off of the average, then I'm going to look and see what I can do to fix that problem.
Yeah. And Retro Sean, friend of the show, brings up frame generation and the input lag there. I mean, kind of muddies the water as well.
I only turn frame generation off. I'm using the gamepad and it doesn't matter.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't know. I just, this whole discussion is just like such bigger than just like, oh, hey, no, actually, we think 120 hertz or 120 frames per second is the goal, and everyone should try to meet that. It's like, well, I don't know. I don't think we can necessarily agree with that.
Well, I think the point is there is no easy answer for this question. Right?
Yeah,
it's not that we're not answering it. It's that it's not an easy.
Yeah, well,
it's a complicated
topic.
Well,
the question, here's a question, because I think, once again, we all have different play styles. We all have different hardware. We all have different ways we like to do. I want to go around and say, okay, so Gordon, what is your min spec? Like, what's your minimal accepted experience for PC gaming?
If I could afford a new panel?
Yeah, or you're just like, you know what? I can't hit this barrier of quality, whether it's frame rate, frame time, resolution, whatever, you know, the metric is. What is your minimum that you're like, you know what? If I can at least hit this, I'm not even going to play at all.
Well, again, for the game that I play, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, for you personally.
I wish I could have 144 hertz OLED or higher. I mean, really, it would be nice, right? So I would say that would be
What's the minimum?
Minimum. That'd be my minimum if I could, you know, basically go out and get approval to buy a nice, great big Samsung OLED.
I know, but you're playing it without it now, so that now is...
It's on a 60 hertz panel.
Smooth because, 30, you know, then, is what I'm hearing.
Smooth 60, but it's a game where I can basically, like, zone out for 3 minutes because that's the style of game that it is.
Okay, yeah. Elena, what is your bare minimum?
Probably 40. It's in the 40 to 50 range. I prefer 60, though.
Okay. Will?
Well, I'm 360 or bust, baby.
Oh, look at you. Look at you.
No, your minimum.
No. My minimum, like I really, it's not, it is literally a thing I don't worry about. I will play,
I mean, but
40
there
hertz.
Is
I
a point.
I play 40 hertz, 30 hertz on the Steam Deck.
20 hertz? See, there is a minimum.
For me, though, it's not that, I'm telling you, it's not the average. Like, Dead Cells is a perfect example. That game looks, your average frame rate on the Steam Deck is great, but it sags occasionally to the point that I find it impossible to play, because in that game, if you miss a block, then you're dead and you have to start over.
Yeah.
And like, so if I'm 60 average, that's 40 average, whatever, that's fantastic. But if it drops down to 20 occasionally, I'm going to stop playing it. I don't play Dead Cells on the Steam Deck. Because even the native Vulkan version is janky occasionally.
Will?
But if it, go ahead.
I was going to ask Willis.
Willis.
Yeah. Willis, what's your minimum?
60. Yeah, because I mean, like,
if it's below 60, you won't even play it. I'm saying, what is your minimum?
Minimum 60. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Dang. If so,
thanks to you, Adam.
Not even 60. Then
spoiling
me,
playing games at 60. So it was.
Who the hell is playing under 60 hertz?
I mean, on handhelds, like I said, yeah, like so 40. For me, like my bare minimum, if I can't at least hit 30, a nice smooth 30, then I'm not worth playing it.
But once again, I mostly
Gordon made a face. Once again, I mostly play on handheld though, so I don't have that luxury to
has
always
no son now.
Yeah,
no, I just think that like if it actually affects your performance, and I think the truth is most people don't know it's affecting the performance. But wait, the eye opener.
Sorry, you mean performance, but, like how well you're doing in the game?
Yeah, I think
once again, for me, I don't care about performance. I'm there to play the game and have fun. I don't really care about how I'm performing. So 30 for me, as long as it's a nice smooth 30, that's all I care about. So,
but I mean, if you're actually losing battles because you're playing at 30 hertz, 30 frames a second, to me, that's not. I mean,
if he's having fun, is he really losing?
Yeah, no. That's what I'm saying. Like, that's what it's so subjective. I know it makes you cringe, but for me, I'm like, nah, whatever.
I think the thing though is if you played at a higher refresh rate and you found your performance was better, like you were winning more, then you would go like, yeah, this sucks. This really sucks. I'm losing because I've got crappy monitor. I've got crappy graphics card or whatever. I can't compete with people that just are running these high refresh panels. And I think that's a real issue, right? To me.
I mean, not for me.
I actually think if it gives me an advantage over somebody else, like maybe I can play games against the kids that I can't play Counter-Strike anymore because you get your ass kicked all day, right? But maybe if I had a 360 hertz panel, then maybe it's this thing that sort of evens the scale with these 13-year-old kids playing on their little crappy...
Gordon, let me tell you about Fortnite, where the kids are all playing on Switches and PS4s.
I know,
you can get in there and just absolutely wreck house. You're like, is that a bot or is it a 9-year-old? I don't know, but they're still dead.
Fortnite is not my game, so
I just think it
would be an interesting thing to do because I do think, like Will, you're saying you're actually noticing at those suboptimal frame rates that you're actually like even in fighting games if you're missing moves that's not good. Right?
Fighting games are usually locked at 60 because of the network code.
Yeah, actually they intentionally lock it. At 60.
But also if you don't hit that 60, you're at a decided disadvantage. Is my understanding.
Actually, Gordon, have you never benchmarked a fighting game?
No, because I no disrespect, but I think it's just for button mashers because I don't get it because it just feels like monkey smashing on the keyboard. That's all fighting games are, in my humble opinion, because that's all it is. No. Like what is like? Well, do you actually have any control?
We're gonna have a lot of fighting game people being like,
this is not simply scripted. Yeah. Just mash in the button faster and you will win.
Once again, this is not the official position of the full nerd.
And Dune, I'm sorry, I don't get it. Whatever.
Well, I asked because I did recently, since I've been doing some reviewing, I've been like, oh, hey, what do built-in benchmarks look like in fighting games? And usually, you can't unlock the frame rates. The benchmark is, did you hit a stable 60 or not?
So it's binary. It's either yes
or
no.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The benchmark at the end is like, hey, who cares what your maximum frame rates were? Were you able to maintain a 60 or not? That's the benchmark. And that's how they think about it. Because, fluidity there means even different than FPS crowd.
What we've learned about Gordon today is that winning is the only thing that matters to him. And specifically, even though he only plays World of Warships, he still cares about FPS games as his golden standard.
Look, there goes our Evo sponsorship right there.
Liquid R says Gordon will be a horrible guest speaker at Evo. All you button mashers. You don't even know what you're doing anyway.
Do you really have control? I just don't like games where it's like, oh, well, you just have to memorize a special move. Special move? What?
I mean, getting a headshot in a video game is a memorized move, dude.
Yeah, or if you can fly a helicopter in Battlefield 2, that's a memorized move. No normal human can fly Battlefield helicopters.
Yeah, no, I can't either. That's why I'm always in back on the helicopter, because you don't want to be like, oh, no, I've got this helicopter I'm flying, and then everybody spawns in there, and you wipe your whole damn team out. You can't fly the damn thing.
I really want to see Gordon as a guest commentator at EVO, just commentating on the fighting games.
He's like, well, can we just do a Gordon commentary stream?
We should. Yeah, we should. Yeah.
I'm going to ask this, though. What's EVO? You mean like Intel EVO laptops?
All right. Well,
extra virgin olive oil for
grumpy old Muppets right now.
I just don't. I just think fighting games are, you know, not my cup of tea.
This is our next short.
Exactly. There we go. I got it.
All right. Well, I think you should do a poll. You should replace the poll with what is the minimum frame rates that people are willing to do? 30, 60, 90, 120. Because I want to hear what people's minimums are now that you've heard ours.
Mine's 40.
Then my next question is, and once again, going around the board. If money were no object, if hardware were no object, like what would be your optimal? Like what you know? Okay, maybe not no object, because obviously, yeah, you would just go for. Okay, so I don't know how to say this, but yeah, like what do you feel like is the sweet spot then? Gordon, let's go first.
500. Do they have 1,000 yet?
All right, 501. Can we do 501?
Yeah.
Is this Price is Right?
So no matter what, you always want the hardware that just hits 500, and that's your sweet spot.
That would be my sweet spot, especially if it lets me win all those fighting games, because I've been mashing the button, and apparently if I mash the button harder on 500 hertz, then I win better.
Elena, what is your sweet spot, if you could aim for it?
Oh. Honestly, the genres of games that I play, it doesn't really matter that much. So I'm pretty fine at like 120, 144 if I can hit it. But I'm also fine with, again, I think for me, it's more about just generally how smooth it is. So basically what Will was talking about, right? Like I don't really like to see it kind of jump between different average frame rates, or not even average, you know, having my lows pretty low. So, I mean, I'm fine at 75, I'm fine at 90, I'm fine at, you know, 120. My monitor goes up to like, I think my current one goes up to 165, but I usually keep it around like I aim for like 120 with it.
Okay. Yeah. Will, what is your sweet spot?
Yeah, I think anything over 120 is probably good for most people. I think, and like Elena said, stability is always going to be more important to me than getting those high highs.
One thing real quick, just adding this in before Willis goes, one thing we didn't address too was variable refresh rates.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah.
Right.
So that can influence an opinion too.
Of course. Yes. Willis, what was your sweet spot?
Same as Lana's, just a smooth 60.
Okay. So your minimum and your sweet spot is the same thing. Okay.
Yes. You're looking at the same.
I don't want to go over. I don't want to go under. Just give me that nice, sweet 60.
Yeah. And for me, like, yeah, I feel like 60 is my sweet spot. Like, I don't feel like it's too low. You know, higher is great, but it's not necessarily required either. Like, I don't know. 60 has always just been what I've gamed at, and I'm fine with that. I should say 64K, because I care much more about visual fidelity than frame rates. Ooh. So 64K if I had my pick.
You mean that brand new Asus 8K panel?
Oh yes, definitely.
I just want one of those wide. I want those two of those 180 degree monitors on either side, so I can just turn. Full coverage.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I can't remember. I feel like there was only one last thing I was going to bring up with this, but yeah. Well, we've got the poll going. So far, it's over 100 votes of the minimum playable FPS. Number one is at 60. So it seems like people are saying 60, they won't play underneath 60. Second is 30 at 25%.
Next week, we're going to talk about whether you should have your mouse sensitivity set high or low.
Or low. Yeah.
Oh.
That's a good question.
Here comes the angry people. Yeah. Everybody's angry next week.
And I just play on controller. So there you go. I pretty much only play on controller. Yeah.
Noel Jern in the comment earlier said that Adam sniffing all those handhelds made him him able to play under 60 frames without noticing anything. It's like, all that sniffing, Adam.
Yeah.
It's gotten to you.
I mean, yeah. All right. So hopefully, Ivan, we you know, had an interesting discussion for your question. Oh, you know what? I do want to bring up Brad. He's actually off, so that's why he didn't join us today. But he did talk about this. He said 120 hertz for the win for him. I've spoken to NVIDIA engineers in the past, and they said human perception really notices frame rate difference when doubling hertz. So if you're used to 60, then 120 will be a tangible upgrade you can feel, and it's fast enough to be responsive to the widest range of games, solo and competitive, yada, yada, yada. I've tested this and can subjectively attest to it. Going from 144 hertz to 240 didn't feel like an upgrade, but getting a 360 hertz monitor for CSGO and Rainbow Six Siege felt amazingly delicious butter. But just double so you don't spoil yourself for future upgrade paths. 240 hertz plus is overkill for the vast majority of folks.
The reason,
end quote,
going above 240 hertz, like there's only a handful of games that will run on any hardware now at more than 240 hertz at reasonable, like non-potato settings. Like you're like, talking about like Valorant and Counter-Strike and maybe Fortnite if you turn off all the bells and whistles.
Siege.
Yeah. It's mostly the hardcore competitive stuff. I assume Dota and League, but I don't know how much frame rate applies to them.
Yeah, I don't know. Interesting discussions. That's why I love talking about this, because it is. I feel like everybody's everywhere.
Yeah.
It's completely different depending on what you do.
Ivan did ask earlier, like, why? So why do we have Smooth 30 as our Discord sticker?
Gordon, please tell
how did
us
that happen?
Smooth 30.
So this is a classic story about IGN wrote a review of a former coworker of mine wrote a review, and I think it was like, he said in the review that it was like a smooth 30 on a console.
Wait,
so
was it when he was at IGN or was it when he was still with
PC
Gamer?
It was at IGN. That wasn't a PC Gamer, because no PC Gamer would say that. That was an IGN thing, I think. So and immediately he was mocked by PC Gamers because, like, really? Smooth 30? So, and I say smooth 30 like the cop, one of the cops from Futurama would say it. Smooth 30. Oh, yeah. So that's, because for us, it's not, I mean, maybe if we could get smooth 30, but we wouldn't, but you know, so I do want to point out though, because I saw, there was a Twitter argument I saw a couple, 6 months ago where somebody was saying how the toxic PC community has poisoned people's minds to think that only 60 hertz, you know, 60 frames a second with the minimum was accepted when 30 is fine. And the Mark, who is the person behind Blurbusters, actually had a good point. He's like, there are people who have medical sensitivities to low frame rates. Well, you will get ill. So, and you know, again, Blurbusters is one of the places that has pioneered making higher refresh and smoother frame rates very important. So I believe his research there. So I do think that argument that 30 frames a second is fine, you know, there are some people that know it's not fine at all. In fact, it may make them sick. So there's an actual reason for it.
The fun thing about VR dev was that if you didn't hit your frame rate targets in VR, you could make thousands upon thousands of people throw up. So
you know, we tried that, Will. It didn't work for me. We tried that really, really hard.
Some people, yeah. So like another human spectrum of experience. I did something like 400 or 500 VR demos in the early days of my VR company, and had one person that immediately got motion sick. My wife is one of those people that immediately gets motion. It's like she can last like 5 minutes. It's often women, it turns out, because of presumably because of perceived differences in the way women and men perceive depth. Men tend to prioritize binocular vision, so the eye separation, and women tend to use secondary indicators like shadows and
contrast
and shading and stuff like that, which weirdly binocular vision works great in VR because men developed it, and we weren't able to do self-shadowing characters and stuff like that. So you don't get like the shadow between your nose and your eyes and stuff like that. So that meant your brain wasn't getting the normal depth perception when you were using the VR headset, Elena, and probably made you feel sick almost immediately.
I also talked about this before in the show. I actually ended up talking with the Oculus guys briefly when they were doing all the early demos. And I also, one of the things I mentioned too was that having good spatial awareness, at least in terms of like prior perception, that kind of stuff, also influences it well. Because the first question they had for me was, how did you like it? And the second question is, when I admitted that I was getting motion sick, was, are you an athlete or a dancer? And I was like, both. And they're like, yeah, that's pretty common.
So your sense is better than, yeah, that's interesting.
Right. So a lot of my motion sickness was coming, not just from like the images themselves, but like under my brain going, I am looking off the side of a cliff, but I do not feel any sensation that relates to that. I'm going to puke. Blah. Yeah. That was basically my brain's reaction to that.
Yep.
Oh man, I lost it. Friend of the show. Somebody said, a friend of the show, Bob Sacramento. Gordon, funny you should say medical reasons. I have the opposite. I get headaches with FPS values above 60. I have some people say that as well, like actually high frame rates that makes them sick. So, hey, guess what? You know, it's hard to lock down. It's hard for us to, as PC gamers, to get together and say, hey, you know what? This should be the average, because it's all over the place.
It's almost like everybody's different and we have different needs and preferences.
Yeah. It's a whole spectrum of
that,
experience.
And that is why I love the PC. Because you want to play at 30? Go for it. You want to play at 500? Go for it. You know? You have the ability.
No, one person has to be wrong, Adam. That's how this works.
Let's switch over to Q&A before we need to get out of here. We are running a little low on time. We do have a couple super chats that I want to get to. In the meantime, if you want to get in a question now, at PC World in the chat. If you're watching or listening to this later, go to our description. There's a link to our Discord over there. Fine community we have built up over there. I love all the people over there. And you can put questions in the question channel and hopefully read on the show. But first, I want to thank a friend of the show, Eek44, gave us 169 Danish krone. I have no idea how much that is, but I'm going to assume it's like 500 US dollars. So
thank you.
Thank you so much. That is huge, huge. I love it. It says, Gordon, get well and get to work soon. He is working. Are you implying Gordon's not working? He's doing great work. I'm just kidding. No. Thank you. Thank you, Eek44. And yes, Gordon, keep on your recovery. And friend of the show, Skeet Sayer, gave us $5 Canadian dollars. Thank you so much. Said, this is for the gaming FPS. I noticed that the AMD overlay gives me way more average FPS than the MSI Afterburner. Thoughts?
That's weird.
Yeah, something is not working right, I would guess. But you would assume the OEM tool is the correct one, so...
Yeah, I would say, I mean, I've definitely messed with different overlays and how quickly the polling rate can, or the default polling rate can change between different vendors. But usually, I don't think I've seen the FPS values like that far off.
It could be that ones were, like, I haven't used Afterburner to report frame rate ever. I don't think.
I mostly use Afterburner. Yeah.
Does it show average or does it show median or something goofy?
I mean, you can set it.
It could be that you're showing two different things in different places.
Oh, true. Oh,
or it
true.
Could be that you're showing the 99% frame rate on one and
average over time
is
different than average at that moment. Good point.
And Chad is saying that MSI doesn't see the frame gen. So if you have frame gen on, then that won't. It'll just show you. MSI is showing you real frames.
Really?
And AMD is showing you real frames plus frame gen frames.
Interesting.
Not that frames are less. You know, I don't want to start that.
Yeah.
Trust the hardware vendor's tools first.
Huh. Well, that's interesting.
Usually. Okay. Usually. Not always, but.
I guess I never. All right. Going over to Discord. Friend of the show, CauseMC, says, looking at how screwy the workstation GPU naming scheme is, do we expect a rebranding of consumer GPUs in the next gen? They provide a screenshot of all the NVIDIA Quadro kind of based things. And yeah, the naming scheme is kind of all over the place. But the larger question is, do you think NVIDIA is going to rebrand anytime soon?
For consumer?
For
you
consumer.
Want to go first? No, I don't think so. I know they've got plenty of runway. Usually when they get nervous is when they get up to like 10,000.
Yeah.
You know, when they roll over, they don't want to go to 11,000. Sometimes they do. So if they're at 4090, I would expect 5090, 5080. It just makes so much sense. The language is built in. People understand it. Why go through the pain of trying to rebrand, trying to get people used to a new model number when the vast majority of gamers understand they had a 1060, now they want a 5060, right? That's been beat into people over the years. So I can't see them throwing all that away.
And the RTX brand is just, what, three generations old now? Because that started with 2080. So 2080, 3080, 40. Yeah, so I think these numbers are here for a bit. On the workstation side, I think it's more complicated. And I wouldn't be surprised if they bifurcate the AI, like the cards designed for AI training from the workstation cards for people doing 3D Max and Maya and stuff like that.
Yeah, I wonder how that would be interesting, right? How do you split that off, and then where do you – is the workstation market – how much money's left there compared to
– Yeah, and like why – is it worth spending that much more money for a card for better uptime on like Maya, like CAD, I guess, maybe? I don't know. I don't know what the market is like for those. We don't really cover that stuff, so.
Yeah.
But I do know that the AI cards are increasingly like just – hey, here's a whole bunch of GPUs and tensor cores and stuff like that, and there's no video out ports on those, so it makes sense for those to be a different product line than the Quadro cards or whatever.
Nice. Kind of an interesting question over here from Hell Diapers 2.
Oh,
Hell Diapers. That's what my wife has to deal with all the time.
Is that a fighting game?
saving super democracy from the babies,
from the babies and the messes they make. The question is, legally speaking, does a modern day GPU still qualify to be identified as a card? Have they always called them cards?
Yeah, I think so.
Like, you put in this graphical processing unit card.
Look, I joked that the 50 series, they were going to have, you're just going to put this motherboard into the GPU.
Yeah.
And they did not deny that. I'm just going to put that out there.
Yeah.
I mean,
they're still cards.
Yeah, it's still cards.
Is that because it's an add-in card?
It goes in a slot.
Yeah. Is that what where that kind of
you call add-in board, I guess, but, I think card has been accepted language. It's not going to, I think they're still, we haven't seen a major change to, although, the amount of people using riser cards and risers and displaying them in bizarre ways does make you think that maybe we should think about like a different way to put graphics cards into machines these days, because it's so popular to put them in places that you don't expect, So,
I mean, like you can buy the external boxes that plug in via some sort of external PCI Express connector for a lot of different kinds of hardware these days, whether it's Thunderbolt or something proprietary.
It's just so funny because, you have the riser card and people want to show off their graphics card. They put them in the front of the system. They put them on the side of the system. Yeah. It's like, wow, so it's funny that we still have the old fashioned, connectors. Although, the vast majority of people do it that way, but it does make you think like maybe there should be some thoughts on a different way to mount graphics cards.
It's increasingly the tail wagging the dog too when you look at like power consumption and space. I mean, like a 4090 is an enormous amount of the volume inside your computer case these days.
Yeah.
And then gaming is so important to PCs, desktops especially.
Yeah. Question from a friend of the show, Ivan R. Intel Arc clearly tries to befriend PC enthusiasts. Endless camera appearances of Tap on YouTube channels and even the Full Nerd. With openness, do you think this will backfire when Intel will go prime time with properly priced GPUs? And for their example, 1,000 and above.
I would assume they would calibrate that based on their performance. If they're going to ship a $1,000 card that performs against a $500 AMD or NVIDIA card, yeah, that would backfire. But if they come out with a $1,000 graphics card that performs well against a $1,000 AMD or NVIDIA card, or maybe a $1,200. Maybe they have to underprice against their competitors because they understand they're the newcomers. Then, no, I don't think so. It all depends on how the card performs. So they're going to know internally how it performs, and they will calibrate against that. So I would encourage them, though, to continue to come out, because it has been the one thing that has made, Arc more palatable to people. It's made it far more acceptable. It's after the, you know, I think we, it's fair to say, disastrous launch of the original ARC graphics cards, you know, it, it has been a good thing. So again, it depends on how it performs and how it's priced. So.
Yeah. I mean, and I, at least for us, we've always enjoyed having conversations, and that's why we like do have, we do like having vendors on that who are willing to have open and honest conversations about stuff. So, you know, like, I think that's, that benefits, for the most part. I can't foresee a backlash.
It's always nice to talk to people who are able to talk about the product and not just the talking points about the product. Right. And Gordon's right. If the card performs with the other cards at that price point, it'll do, people will buy it. And if it doesn't, then, and given how badly that launch went initially, they may have to price a little bit under just to get the movement they want. They know how many they want to sell, and then there's a spreadsheet someplace where they put that number in, and then they just keep lowering the price until they get the number, the numbers to line up.
Right. Last question before we get out of here. Fun one from friend of the show, Coffee. That's a very interesting one. Who would come out alive between the full nerd teams with shotguns and 1,000 rabid raccoons trapped inside the PC World office?
Oh, 1,000, and it's not a huge office.
Yeah, not a huge office. Also, it's actually segmented, this, yeah. So I don't know how we kind of, you know, narrow this down, but assuming we're trying to get to the elevators.
So wait, is the scenario one person?
We only have shotguns, and there's 1,000 rabid raccoons, and it's all of us from the PC World team.
I think we just shut the door and poke a shotgun hole right there and just blap, blap, blap.
Are you going to let other people in?
I'm sorry,
see, this
I got
is
bad
will
news.
Survive.
Yeah.
Wait, so it's all of us with shotguns or one person with shotgun and...
So I guess the question is, you know, yeah, all of us with shotguns, and there's 1,000 rabbit, you know, raccoons. Who would come out alive in this scenario, trapped in the PC World office? I place my bet on Gordon, actually.
I mean, Gordon is, my, you know, the short answer for damn sure.
Yeah, I have gamed that scenario out, so I think I would.
See, yeah,
he's not lying. He's not lying.
The question, I'm looking at what kind of pants everybody's wearing. Who's wearing sweatpants and who's wearing like real jeans, no Lycra?
Why? Because you feel like the raccoons are gonna.
Yeah, you gotta protect from the bites, right? They get through the clothes. Oh, you're done.
Yeah, I'm not wearing jeans. You're wearing jeans.
I'm wearing dungarees.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I don't know if they would actually approach. I mean, and if you're
1,000 rabid of them.
Yeah, no, but you're talking about everybody, like the entire staff, or just simply like five people?
I think the people who aren't here probably, we're writing them off, would be my guess. Sorry, everyone else.
I mean, if it were like 10 people all armed with shotguns against 1,000 raccoons, I would take the people. So
really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, no, but then more people, the more chances of crossfire, I feel like.
No,
especially people who've never shot shotguns before.
Come on, left for dead. You just back into a corner, right?
You can't back 10 people into a corner.
No, but you put two people in the front kneeling. You put two people above them shooting. You just alternate.
You are assuming.
Old school European war tactics.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But I'm saying that's assuming the people, you know, I love all the people I work with here at PC World. But, you know, some people have shot shotguns. Some people have not. Some people know tactical, you know, things, but some people don't.
I play left for dead with Gordon. I know how this goes.
I know. I'm just saying. No. Yeah, I would not assume that just because we're all here with shotguns, we would all be able to work together and come out of it alive.
Look, if the people who don't have shotguns and aren't part of the team, the people who are willing to do team play also have shotguns. It works itself out. It's me or the raccoons. I'm choosing me.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's definitely tough because, you know, shotguns are limited to, you know, so you do like, what, 8 rounds? So if you're lucky, so that's...
I mean, yeah, you'd have to tactically coordinate, you know, reloading between people, and
we need people running ammo up when your right? finger gets tired from pulling the trigger constantly. You got to get somebody in to swap you out.
You know.
Yeah, I honestly, I'll be frank. I don't think my chances are good in any kind of survival scenario.
Oh, no.
I'm fully cognizant of my strengths and weaknesses, and I only would survive by the grace of other people and their smarts. My old days, one of my bosses would always ask us, you know, in the apocalypse, what do you think your role would be? Do we want you on our team? And I looked at her and I said, I would be your quartermaster. And she's like, you're in. I was like, great. I mean, that's what I'm good at.
Look, the seed keeper. Keeper of seeds is the most important role in the post.
I am good at foraging for supplies. I am not as good at warding off the hordes.
Yeah. Designated looter.
Sending upon me.
It's okay, Elaine. I got your back. I always play the healer, so you know I'll be watching everyone's back.
What's outside the window there? Can we jump down on like a balcony or something, or is it like three stories, six stories straight down?
It depends what side of the building you're on.
Okay. You would kill yourself.
Yeah.
There's a,
do we still
you know,
have
that
fire ladder?
We do.
Yeah. There's the a fire strategy. Ladder that I put in there. Because I always realized, like, if there was a fire, you'd basically be fried chicken. So I saw
that. I mean,
that
only gets us
ladder.
Down to the next level. But
it gets you down 20 feet, and then you only have to drop 15
there's
feet.
Some trees
you might break
down
a
there.
Leg. But
no, I mean, then where do you go from there? Then you're still. Five floors.
You
up.
Buy what, some time.
Yeah, once you get over the ledge, away from the raccoons, you just wait for help.
Yeah.
No, because
at that point too, you could just start using the shotguns to just fling the raccoons as they come off the side
like
of the building.
Baseball. Yeah.
Baseball. Wow. You're just like, batter up.
You know what? Let the people on the street deal with the raccoons.
Yeah. It's not the worst thing they've seen.
Yeah.
That was
true. Who is it? Somebody asked YJS, is our office big enough to fit 1,000 raccoons? I think that's the point. No, they would be jammed in here and ready, ready to bite their
goners.
Way out. Yeah.
Yeah, we'd be goners.
It'd
because
be
of the
full.
Fact that they would be packed on top of us.
They would also be fighting themselves too. So
that's
you know,
true.
Maybe a portion of it. Yeah.
Yeah. And remember, you know, it's your shotgun blast at that range is very narrow. It's not what people think it is. So.
Yeah, at that range.
But the nice thing is one blast will go through one raccoon, two raccoon, three raccoon. So you'll take out maybe six, seven at a time.
But they're so fast. Look, and they're so gnarly, though.
I grew up in the country. When I was a kid and we saw any of the nocturnal animals that were out during the day, you just preemptively strike because you assume they're rabid.
Mm.
And then you call the county. They come pick them up and may or may not test them depending on what they have money that month.
Yeah, you know. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it's great.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's coming right for you is the answer they would accept. So.
Well, they don't care because you see a skunk in the daytime, it's presumed bad.
Yeah.
1,000 skunks would be bad. Yes.
1,000 skunks, you're not going to get away. You don't want to survive that.
Yeah. Friend of the show, Braythorn. Hi, Braythorn. Gave us $5. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Said if I ever get to visit the office, yes, you should come visit the office. We'll do some videos. We got to have a Nerf battle. I modded my nemesis. Nice. I had a friend who, Mikey, who's been on the show. He used to get those batteries that were overvolted and put them in Nerfs and just like, you know, burn out the motor because it was fun. So.
Oh, hey, I have the Aliens Nerf gun. Oh, I waited for a year to get it. And basically, they made enough of them that it has no collectability at all. So.
Oh, because they made enough?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
It's still cool looking.
It
though.
Looks cool.
Game over, man. Game over. Speaking of game over, we got to get out of here.
Game over.
Before we go, though, I do want to bring up over here on my email. I've been emailing back and forth with some of the winners, or I have been emailing back and forth with the winners from the AMD
the
bundle.
Starfield?
Yeah,
Starfield
yeah. And so they have been getting them. I've been talking with one of them specifically. I didn't request if I could say their name out loud, so I'm not going to. That was my bad. But maybe they're okay with it. They sent me a photo of the build. It was awesome. But they were somebody who did their first build in a 5600G during the pandemic. And then when prices came down, they got a 6700 XT, a great upgrade. And then now they're getting to play at high-end hardware. They never thought they would be able to with that 7900 XTX. And they're super happy about it. I'm so glad they got to do that. And yeah, no, it's cool to hear of somebody who went through that cycle that we talked about of starting out on an APU and then being an upgrade later and now they were able to drop in. I guess they were on a 5000 platform, so I think they had to get a new motherboard, but yeah, worth it for this.
That's
build.
Awesome. Yeah,
no, it was awesome. They said they found a local micro center that they had a surreal experience. I remember being in and out of the store in less than 30 minutes, then built a PC and booted into Windows in like 45 minutes after I got home. Can definitely say I have the build bug and have helped a couple friends build PCs on their own too. That's awesome.
That's
yeah.
rad.
Yeah. Love hearing those stories. Glad you were able to make use of that awesome giveaway. So cool stuff. Yeah, but we should get out of here. Let me bring up, check back next week for your fix of PC building talk here on The Full Nerd. To listen to us on the go, be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube Music, Pocket Cast, anywhere you can point your RSS feed to. We are most likely available to be on there. Please leave a review every time you do. Gordon gets a new background for his Zoom call. I don't know. I want to thank Gordon for coming, joining the show. Thanks, Gordon.
Good to be here.
Thank you, Elena, for joining us and giving us some great insight into the way that you play games.
Thanks, I guess.
Yeah. No, everybody's different. I like it. Will, yeah, I'm glad you're here.
I'm just here to poke Gordon with sticks.
There you go. Watch out for the sensitive bits. Thanks everybody for hanging out. And thank you, Willis, for controlling the verticals and horizontals. Why don't you get us out of here?
All right. Thank you, Adam. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Now, in this post-apocalyptic world with the Full Nerd, whether it's ghouls, raccoons, slime monsters, giant marshmallows, you know, that's okay because we ain't afraid of no ghosts. Take care. See you guys later. Bye.
Hey.
Keep mashing buttons.
Oh, no.